it's like just kind of reminding people, like, it's okay to kind of nerd out. It's okay to be like deeply passionate about something to a point where you like, it's almost kind of goofy. Like, that's how you should feel about things. You should be excited, super excited about like everything that like you love.
Listen up, settle in. What we have here is a two-part episode. It's two parts because I had a conversation with my friend Free, a longtime DJ, a music producer, and a dreamer. We'll call him a dreamer because he dreamed up Record Club. He wanted to create an immersive album listening experience that could replicate the grandiose feeling of sitting in a theater and watching a film with other fans. That's a direct quote from the LA Times piece written about Record Club, and his enthusiasm for music and for this project and for everything he does is infused in this episode, so much so that I went over to his house and talked to him for probably 4 hours, but we recorded 3 hours of that. And you're gonna hear every ounce because I loved it. I love talking to him. This conversation covers everything from what Record Club is, how he came up with the idea. We talk about his process. We talk about research rabbit holes. We talk about music and taste. And part two, you'll hear many of our mutual friends submitted questions, friends of his and I's, friends of ours that you know, like Christine and Maddie, and there's so much more to come, but let's get to the episode as quickly as possible. I'm so grateful that you're here, that you're listening, and that Record Club exists. A couple months ago, my friend Tom, you might know Tom, I probably brought Tom up before, but she told me that she was going to something called Record Club, and they were going to listen to an album and talk about it. It was all kind of vague, but I was like, that sounds cool. Can I come to the next one? It's every month. And she was like, yeah, for sure. I'll let you know. So the next month comes along and I went, and drama ensues. Or not really drama, just it was lovely. And you'll hear the entire arc of me becoming a member, if you will, of Free's Record Club, and then getting to become a fan of Free and, dare I say, his friend now, which I am. So you're going to hear us talk, and you're going to hear us talk next week too. I really hope you come back. As I always say, you know, part two is where things really come alive. So make sure to come back next week, but you're here now. And for now, here's my conversation with Free, part one. It's so funny when stuff like that happens. Like, I went to this, I was at this big sample sale that my friend was having this weekend, and my friend was there with me, and I was like cashing out with like these two pairs of pants. And my friend, who was like so kind and with me, Lauren, she was like, are you sure you have the right ones? Because there was another one there. And like, I really want, like, are you? And I was like, yeah, it's fine. I'm positive. I'm super sure. Get home, super the wrong size. Super. Oh, and I told her, and she was like, it's just so fun. And I did the same thing with you just now. I was like, maybe it's the microphone. You knew. Oh my gosh. But it's good.
I feel like when people have a quick impulse response to something, I'm like, you know,
I enjoyed preparing for this, getting to listen to your interviews and getting to listen to you interview other people. How do you typically prepare? Like, how do you feel going into those situations?
I over prepare. I think normally, like since we were talking about the one for Autumn, like, yeah. I literally watched the movie maybe twice and like made hella notes and just kind of like wanted to be able to like really speak the language of the film, understand the characters, understand like, I don't know, just some of the little signature things that just kind of like show that you care. Cause I feel like that's a great way to like show somebody like, yo, I respect your work. I put the time in.
Yeah.
So I normally spend days and days on it. I'm pretty ridiculous though, because honestly, it's like, since I haven't had, I don't think I've ever had a real job, like long-term real job. So I've always kind of found like my little creative hobbies or jobs or work is like my place to like be a 9-to-5-er.
Yeah. I mean, I think we were talking about this as well. And in that episode with Autumn DeWilde, the incredible director who we both had, like, oddly have gotten to meet, and it is so incredible and iconic, and
she's so cool.
You got to interview and you both were talking about research rabbit holes, and yeah. Something I wrote down that I loved that she said, and that was how that quality, I guess we'll call it, or skill of mm-hmm. of wanting to go really deep into something and research the enjoyment of that, which I think yeah. all three of us share, is an undervalued quality in the school system. And you named that episode The Profession of Obsession, yeah. which is so good. I've saved a clip that I might even and play or put in here.
But, you're more than welcome.
But did you relate to that? You said in that you did, but how did you relate to that, thinking back to school and that you get to do this as your job now?
I feel like I was the kid in school who was always kind of like somewhere else.
Yeah.
But I was really, really somewhere else. Like I vividly remember like, eighth grade, in my math class, I believe. It was just one day I just watched this new Outkast video for like the whole world. And I was just like super deep into, oh, they're putting out a new album. I'm just like, so my mind is just on Outkast the entire day. So I literally just blurred out, like, I forget what I blurted out to the teacher, but it was just like something related to that. And then I got sent to the office. But I feel like when it came to being a student in the normal sense we think of student, I was never great at that, but I was always like good at being a student for things that I was interested in.
Yeah.
So I'd be the kid who goes home and then I'm just like spending my next 5 hours like on like Napster trying to find all the songs I can find, like listening to so much music, making music, terrible music. So I feel like obsession was my way of being a student. That's how I knew how to educate myself.
Yeah.
It could only be through like something that was like fascinating to me or compelling to me. And when that arrives, I'm in full service to it. But if it's not something that has that effect on me, it's hard to want to get myself up to spend time with that. So school was very difficult for me, but like after school was my school, you know?
Yeah.
And when I did finally find a class that really embraced that part of myself was like my media technology class. And literally like some of my teachers in high school, they would be like, listen, you can skip this period, go there and work there. And as long as you report there, I'll give you a B or I'll give you
that's great. Yeah.
So that foundation was laid around high school time where I was really like, okay, I think this is, I don't know what it is exactly, but I know that somewhere in this space of just being creative and obsessed that I can find something for myself. So
yeah, that's great that a teacher was able to
yeah.
reorient you to where you were
yeah.
better, would better serve you and thinking long term. That's rare and that's wonderful. I think the downside, I guess, for similarly, I've always been that way. Similar mm-hmm. feelings around school when I was younger. Just this morning, my mom and my aunt sent me a photo of something they found. It was a a research project. I was really obsessed with Grace Kelly when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, obviously forgot about it. It was when I was in like fourth grade. But I was like, wow, I'm pretty much been full baked. You know, like, you know what I mean? Like that's still, I would still make that now. It would just be like a, you know, Tumblr or something.
Yeah. You know, it's like you were, that was you in there. Like,
yeah.
But you now is pretty much still the you and then in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, I guess thinking about this in terms of interviewing and preparation or even preparation for other projects, it can sometimes be overwhelming. Like finding that balance, just speaking, I guess, for interviewing of being overprepared. And sometimes I'll find myself having so many notes and knowing so much that I'm not as present as I could be and making it a getting into that volley of conversation because I'm wanting to put pennies in their jukebox to have them tell these anecdotes. Yeah.
You know, I think the thing that I learned is that for me, over preparation is more like, okay, I want it to become like my language. I want it to become like this information. I want this information to feel like stuff that I've known for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to, I'm just going to drill it and get all the stuff that I need to where then it just kind of flows out of me because I know it so well.
Yeah.
So for me, over preparation is kind of like, one, it's how I show love to the thing. And two, it's how I can like feel normal doing it. Cause I feel like if I don't feel like I did a little too much or like, wow, I have so much, I feel like I feel underprepared if I'm not over prepared.
Yeah.
If that's, I know that probably sounds crazy, but, I don't know any other way to do it personally. But I think that there were probably times when I would overdo it and I would just like maybe try to, what's a good word? What's it called when you're like right before a test?
Cramming.
Yeah. And I found that that didn't work. When I space it out and give it like weeks of, even if I'm not just like spending all day long doing it, give myself weeks of like, okay, a few hours a day of just like chipping away.
Yeah.
By the time I arrive to the thing, I am overprepared, but I'm also like, it's like in me now.
Yeah.
Like I've just kind of let it become a part of me in a way.
Totally. It's marinated.
Right. That's a great word. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're just spending time with it.
Yeah. Than... like really kind of like welcoming it into my life in a way so that like when I do arrive to the thing, it's like, this is like a homie. Like this is, I know this stuff. I know this world.
Yeah. Well, it feels like that's what you do from my perspective as a fan and audience member of the record club. It feels like a similar.
That's pretty much the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, okay. First of all, congrats on nearly 1 year of record club.
Crazy.
And it's also your birthday month starting right now.
Yeah. February is definitely my favorite month of the year.
When is your birthday?
The 18th.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So how are you feeling about coming up on a year of record club, another year of life in general? Like what's been on your mind? What have you been contemplating lately?
I've really been contemplating just like what the next version of my life is that is like me being less kind of like thing to thing and like kind of steadying out like. Having this exist for a year and having it kind of become a part of my life deeply so fast, it feels right. And it feels like, okay, I found, you know, the thing that I was looking for a long time. So just kind of now starting to imagine like, okay, this could be the next 5 years. This could be the next 10 years. This could be the next 50. Who knows?
Yeah.
So just kind of like steadying into that and trying to like picture a version of my life that feels a lot more like, okay, this is what I do.
Focus.
Because, you know, I do so many things.
Yeah.
But having this thing kind of gives everything a bit more purpose where it's like, okay, I'm not just like firing aimlessly. It's like, okay, it's all within the context of like this being my thing.
Yeah.
So just, I feel like just kind of settling in creatively and career-wise, like, okay, this is maybe what you do now. So maybe just lock in here and like, let's just ride this wave and like see how beautiful your life could be from that. So.
Oh, wow. I mean, I think that going back to the Autumn episode, that came up as well. And I think she really mirrored that sentiment of she directed her first feature film when she was 50.
I got so much from talking to her about that I feel like I'm still like pulling from in a way.
And she made this distinction too of like, people say jack of all trades, master of none when it's not going well, but then when it becomes successful, when someone becomes successful, they say a renaissance man.
Right.
Which I thought was really interesting.
Yes. And I love that line. Yes.
Yeah. But the other part that she said, and I think really underlines the point you're making about your situation, and I hope I get here with, because I relate too. She said she got to a point where she accepted that because she does so many things, it's going to take a bit longer to get really good at them or one of them, mm-hmm. because we're not. And I've often felt that way where I admire other people who are so focused at one craft and really develop that craft and get really good at something. And that hasn't been the case for me. But I also, as much as I'm saying that, I'm thinking of you, I'm thinking of our friend Christine, I'm thinking of so many people who do so many things, and they all seem to do them so well. So I know it is possible, but finding that, it sounds like you're craving that focus. And and somebody told me once on this show, because I used to ask that question a lot. I for many years I was like, have you ever felt like a master of none? Like, what do you do? You know, because this show is just always such a mirror of whatever I'm contemplating. But somebody once said that a therapist said to them, being someone who does a bunch of things or has a bunch of interests is a sign of a highly creative personality, which was like a compliment and nice. And he was like, what the therapist said was to not try to focus in anywhere, to just keep going, and wherever you're meant to focus will rise to the top.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like that's just what's happened to you recently with Record Club. And it's very clear, like, your enthusiasm is incredible and you're so good at context and storytelling, and you're incredibly engaging and knowledgeable. And to your point, like, you can tell it's a language within you. And as a member of the club.
Also, thank you.
Yeah, no, it's true. Or, you know, as the LA Times put it, when they wrote a piece on you in Record Club recently, and I agree, your passion is very infectious and you can feel that this project is really important to you. So I guess we should probably define it for people who haven't gotten to attend. How do you talk about it? Like, let's say you met someone on the plane or something, and they were like, what are, instead of saying, what do you do? Cause you might go DJ, or you might say, you know, something more broad for a stranger, but like, if you were defining Record Club in a quick way, do you have a log line?
It's the theater for the album. That's how I try to define. I mean, and you know, theaters are, you don't normally have someone telling you about the movie before you watch it in the theater. But I think that it's my version of a theater, and
we would like that.
Honestly, that would be incredible. Honestly, but the theater for the album is the fastest way to define it, because that's the intention, is to like. Yeah. Create those experiences that feel some like the music equivalent of the theater experience, where it's like you get a bunch of people together to listen to this album in full. So that's kind of what I define it as.
I want to go much deeper, but I was just curious if you had a quick. That's great. That's wonderful to have.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of like my, to be honest, that was like my, like, when I was still trying to discover what it was I wanted to do, because I wanted to have some kind of language for it that, like, I'm like, okay, it's this. That was like one of the things that like allowed me to kind of like really build it out. Was like, okay, why do we not have theater like experiences for albums? Why is it just movies that get that? Music is like the most important thing to all of us. So important that it's in movies. So it's just like, why don't we have those kind of experiences that like raise it to that, like put it on that pedestal that it should be on? So that was kind of like the inspiration. So the theater for the album.
Wow. Okay, let's go way back. How did you?
I was born 1980. I'm kidding.
I do actually want to hear more about what you were like as a kid and your intro to music, but let's linger in record club for a minute. Like, yes. It began nearly a year ago,
yeah.
But when did you first get the idea for it?
It had been like an idea floating around my head for a few years, but I think the first time I put something to paper was maybe 2018, 2019.
Oh, wow.
But it was a different version of it. It was, I wrote a pitch for a TV show about albums, and it was going to be called The Full Length. I'm very into simple names, by the way. But it was going to be called The Full Length, and I'd written maybe like an 8 or 9 page like kind of pitch deck, just kind of like, the whole idea was like, because we don't have the MTVs and things like that anymore, it's just like, the albums are not events anymore, and if they are, it's a bit more like a weird kind of like, hey, we got a big in-store coming up, you know, it's just nothing mm-hmm. like, you know, the growing up when it's like, oh, the Velvet Rope came out, it's just like, it's all the rage. Like, you're talking about it in school, you're seeing it on TV, the news, like, you know, ABC might be like, here's a new video, you know, just like, so that music doesn't feel like an event anymore. It just kind of feels like something that we just like, go on, cool, you know, song on your phone. So I just thought it was just, we were treating it too passively. And that was kind of like my whole way in was like, all right, can we make something today that feels like a bit of yesterday, but like in a modern way, like, meeting us where we are and not trying to bring the old thing back, but like delivering some kind of music programming that like reels people back into like the events that we missed in our childhood of like when music really was like life or death, so important to like popular culture and our lives in general. So I wrote out a treatment and was just kind of like sitting on it, emailing it around to people, trying to see if people would be down to like help me make it and do it. Make like a pilot, and then the pandemic happened, and I was just kind of like, I'm not doing this shit. it somehow popped back up.
What
like, oh, this was November, December of 2022 that it kind of became a bit more concrete in my mind, like, okay, I want to do this, because I had been like writing little notes to myself about like what the name could be. Just like floating it around, but not really taking it seriously. But then like November, December, I was like, okay, if you were to try this, what would it look like? How would you define it? Like, what's the logo? What's the, like, just build the world out and just like, maybe that'll just kind of bring it into fruition. And when I finally kind of had like an idea of what it could be, I started like kind of DMing people like, hey, could I do this at your venue? Hey, what do you think of this idea? Blah, 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 blah. The responses were not great. And I think that sent me into a place of like, you know what? I really think this could be cool and I really believe in this. Mm. So I'm just going to have to find a way to, I don't know, just like do a workaround, which is what I'm used to doing. Cause you know, I don't really get, you know, I've always gone through the back door. I've never been like, oh, right this way. Like that never does. That never happens for me. So I was like, all right, you got to do it again. And a part of me was kind of just like annoyed because I'm just like, is no one seeing this? Am I crazy? Mm. I got connected through I had reached out to my friend Modi, who's just someone who is a person you hit up if you need to figure out something. Like he is like a producer. He just like knows everyone, is super tasteful, just a genuine great guy.
Renaissance man.
And kind of like me, like. Like he ran a blog back when I was like in college and coming out of college that was just like such a cool blog. It was called DC to BC. So he's always been like the guy with a good taste who knows how to put things together for a while. And I knew I needed to like talk to someone else if I was going to make this happen. So I reached out to him and he was like, I reached out to him like, do you want to do this with me? And he was like, I love this idea. I would want to do it with you, but I don't have the capacity right now. But you should work. You should check out this guy. And he connects me to this guy, Elwood, who has this company called Slow Jams. And I was like, yo, like, I want to do this listening party. Here's the idea. Would you guys want to run it? Blah, blah, blah. Can I do it in your space? And he was down. And he was like, if you're gonna do it, what would the first album be? And I'm like, Voodoo. Absolutely. And yeah, that was kind of it. We decided on a date. I was like, let's do it. February 16th, it's like the month of Aquarians, Soulquarians. There's a lot of connections there. And also it's close to my birthday. So it was very much so just like something for me. And I was like, all right, let's just see if this works. Let's just see if me just being me and expressing my love for the things that like I know are so important to the making of myself, if people would find any interest in that. Or see themselves in that, like, oh yeah, I love this too. And it was pretty instant. Like the feeling, like from that first session, it was only like 40 people. We didn't sell tickets. It was free. We had like 100
artists. Same space?
Different space. So we were doing it at downtown at first, okay, at the Slow Jam studio. And it felt good pretty quick. Just something about voodoo, for one, I think just like, that's why I'm so excited about the next one.
Yeah.
It's just something
we're
about that.
We're redoing that album.
Yes. I'll be playing Voodoo February 14th. But yeah, something about that album kind of just like became like the, okay, this is how it's going to feel. Like, it's like getting into the spirit of the music and not just like music as like a, you know, well, yeah, it's cool. It's like getting into the spirit of the music. And I think that's one album that really kind of gets people out of themselves and into the music fully. Like, this is so weird and eclectic. I'm not even trying to like think. I just want to feel and listen and just be in it. And watching people respond to that album was like, okay, there's a lot here that I need to really like take seriously. Mm. And I think from that moment on, I just committed to it. After seeing how well that went, I was like, cool, this is it. So you got something. Don't blow it, like really put the time in. And funny enough, right after that, one of the guys who I was working with, who I no longer work with, but good guy, he had posted kind of like a bit of a recap slash like thesis statement TikTok video that went viral, like went super viral. Oh, wow. To the point where like people from like my hometown and from like Houston were like hitting me up like, whoa, this is really cool. People I haven't heard from in years, they were just like, this is incredible. And that was cool, and it also scared me.
Yeah.
Cause that it felt like it was out of my control.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm just like a control freak, but it's just like this is my little world. Like I haven't built a house yet, and now people are moving in. This feels weird. So that made me a little nervous, but I was like, you know what? Like just lock in and just keep it going. Don't think too much right now, just keep going.
Yeah.
Then we did another session for Mama's Gun by Erykah Badu about 2 weeks later, and we sold tickets that time. And two nights back to back sold out. Like,
wow.
And it was amazing. It was a great experience. But it was also kind of like, oh, this isn't mine anymore, and I kind of still want it to be mine.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not ready to like release it yet. Because, you know, collaborating with people you don't know that well, and just, you know, the whole viral thing, it just kind of felt like, wait, I don't know what this is yet. And now everyone's in on it. This feels weird. I got to back up.
Wow. Good.
I got to get to the essence of what this is and really kind of build this house out before, you know, I can really like move forward with the
yeah.
So I had to like get back to just doing it myself, like fully. I'll pay out of pocket to get the venue, whatever I got to do, but I got to do this alone first. And then I can like welcome people in on it. I want to take the scenic route. I don't want to just like, oh, this idea I just started a month ago is now humongous. Like,
wow.
That felt weird. So backpedaled, kind of cut ties with the people I was working with, and just decided I was going to go solo. But then I just pulled in like some close homies to help me like produce it and put it together. And I just like was like, all right, how do you see it? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Where should it be? Like, figure that out. Take some time and do it. So I rented out a space in Echo Park. And I was like, all right, we're going to do two albums, which is crazy. And that version of it, the night when we did Motomami from Rosalia, which I really dove so deeply into, that's when I was like, okay, this is it. Now I found it. And now it's like, it's me.
Wow.
It's me expressing my love for music and kind of writing a love letter to these artists and to these albums, but it's deeply personal.
Yeah.
And I think what was making me nervous or anxious in the beginning was like, it didn't feel personal anymore. It felt like a job. It felt like something that like was just going to blow up and totally. I was going to make a bunch of money and I was going to have fun doing. And I would much rather, I would much rather crash and burn than me not get to do it the way I want to do it. Because that's literally how, like, this is me expressing my love. I don't get to express the love the way I want to express my love. I can't. Right. I can't have that. So pulled back. And listen, I lost hella money doing it when I rented out that venue. But what I got from was like, it's, and it became kind of like a bit of a mantra, at least for 2023 for me, was like a loss to get a win. Mm. Which is like, take a step back and allow yourself to kind of like be a little uncomfortable to put you in a position to where like you can really do it the way you want to do it and move forward in a way that feels like you and not just like you're being pushed forward, you know? So from then on, I was like, all right, we got it. Did not use that venue again because it was too expensive. And somehow, some way got linked to, not even somehow, some way, my friend Chase works with Grandmaster Recorders and I pitched him the idea of like, maybe I could do this here. And wasn't even sure if he would go for it, but like, it's like, maybe I could do this here. And this was right after Soho House had, we were going to do like a summer residency in 2023 with them. And then that kind of fell apart. I guess they didn't really, you know, it's another thing of just like, oh yeah, got to go the back door again. Got it. Mm-hmm. So I lost maybe like a month's time, lost a month just like waiting to put it together. But then I finally found Grandmaster and I was like, okay, when you find a venue, treat it like a gym. Do it as much as you can and get as good at it as you can. And that's when I was like, okay, cool. Let's do it once a month. That gives me 2-3 weeks to do prep, design, whatever I got to do so I can arrive fully just like informed and like really try to kill it. And the first one we did was Diamond Life from Sade. And that's when it really, really, really got like, okay, this is exactly how I want it to feel. Like,
wow.
It's exactly like how I wanted to do it. I get to change my mind. I get to like, you know, I get to really kind of have, cause you know, so when you're like a really creative person, you don't want, I, like, especially if it's like an idea that is kind of like your baby, at least for the first year or two, right. You have to be so selfish with that thing.
Right. And,
that was kind of like, what I was getting back into was like, okay, like I can just change my mind about the album 2 weeks before. I can just like decide I want to do it this way. I can just play with it. And the fact that I had an audience now and people were kind of like down to go on the journey of like wherever I took it, that was like the safety I needed to really like, okay, say, okay, you can push it forward. Like mm-hmm. you got it. Like just like keep it going. And yeah, Grandmaster has become like our gym. To just like get better and get better and get better and do it every month until like, you know, we outgrow it, you know? And yeah, it's been a blessing. I know I'm just like rambling right now.
No, no, this is incredible. It's such a great space. I that whole story that you, I was not expecting that. I was not expecting it to have been that nonlinear.
Yeah.
Because I came in at the end of that mm-hmm. story and
a lot of ass kicking on the way to yeah.
The loss to get a win.
Yeah,
yeah, that's really interesting. And I think Rick Rubin talks about how if you are most of all art that is good is personal. And when an interviewer pushes back on that, he will clarify and say, I don't think you can make art that's good that's not
right.
Personal.
1,000%.
And he always says, like, if you can, but that's commerce. That's like another
right.
thing.
Right.
And I think you had a moment there where like you could have gone into commerce mm-hmm. and like sold tickets and like it was on the up and up. And the fact that you slowed that train down and stopped it and took the loss to build it in the way that you wanted to is really wild, honestly, because I think that takes a lot of self-awareness. And you know, I keep referencing the episode with Autumn, but I think similarly, you know, she was making Emma, which is a Jane Austen book, but said the same thing about that. Of like, she was like, actually, there's a lot of me in there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you infusing yourself into this project, you know, proves that that Reuben point and doing it your way. And I was just reading an article about Blonde Shell, and she was saying that she made this album that she made during the pandemic, and she had done music under different names for a while, and like nothing really was working. And then she was like, well, fuck it, I'm just going to make this for me, and like nobody's going to listen to it. And so it was like really personal and really raw.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And like, I think this is hitting me hard, because I'm like, what is it that feels like the inside of your brain that feels like you, that only you can do? And doing that, leaning into that 100%, and then having the confidence to, having the clarity to know what that is. So then if it does go astray from that, you can bring it back.
Right.
And then having the confidence to be able to know that that was the correct call.
Yeah. Which I didn't at first.
Of course. And then if it doesn't like build itself back up right away, when you're in the loss before the win, or the ashes before the phoenix rises, like that's tough. But also the thing you said about committing 100%. And that's something I think about too. Like, you don't know what something's going to be like until you go all in on plan A. So at the, and you were saying, you know, with this, you are wanting now with what you've built up, which is incredible. And having been in that room, and it just, I haven't been in any of those other rooms you mentioned, but this one just feels so special. And actually Maddie, during the upcoming Asking for a Friend section, Maddie's question was specifically about the room. I'll actually just read it. She says, well, you'll probably talk about this, but I'd love to get the origins of Record Club, which we are covering right now, and any inclinations he had in the process leading up to what the Record Club would even look and sound like, specifically any insights or events about where it currently is in that space, which we covered a little bit. But I feel like that that space does just feel really good. It was one of the first thoughts that I had when I walked in. And I think that, committing 100% to something and going all in takes a lot of confidence. But so what were you doing? What else were you doing around that time? You've been a DJ for a long time, right?
Yeah, mostly. Well, I mean, outside of the Record Club, DJ's been my job for like the last 8 years, ish. I've been doing it roughly 8 or 9 years, but it's been like 7 or 8 years of like it being like, okay, this is like my job. I also do commercial acting. So I do acting commercials. I've done like a short film or two, but not really for money. Commercial acting got me this apartment for sure. It got me a little bit of space to kind of feel like, okay, maybe I can just like lock in and focus on this. But honestly, 2023, bad year.
Yeah.
Strike, obviously. And
Right. Even
though, you know, I'm not in the union yet. I'm like SAG eligible, but not SAG. Like, I'm not officially SAG. But I was not getting any work 2023. So it was kind of tough because, you know, especially coming out of, you know, sold two nights back to back, go from selling out immediately, go from instant sellouts to like, okay, we sold like 70 tickets and then we had to give away like 30 just to get people in the room.
Totally.
And it was kind of like that for a few sessions, like leading up to John Mayer when LA Times came through. And that's kind of when, you know, word started to really get out a bit more and the audience grew. And then next thing you know, it's like, oh, okay, this is becoming the thing that I thought it could be.
Yeah.
So in that time, I'm DJing here and there, but I'm really just like committing to this and hoping that it works out, but also prepared for it to not work out if, and keeping my options open as far as like what else I could be doing, but really just kind of leading into like, all right, give it 200% like at least try to and see where you land. Like, and if you fail, you fail, but at least you really, really went for it. And I think that's kind of what that was 2023 for me was just like full ahead, full speed ahead, just like go for it. Like this is like, you know, you're 30 something year old now. Like you've seen failure, you understand failure. You've seen some success, but like this could be your chance to really like make it happen.
Yeah.
And don't give yourself any outs. And that was 2023 for me, and it was life changing. Like I just fully committed, and I got to watch it just grow right in front of my face. It was insane. It's still insane. It's quite insane. That this is something, but wow, yeah. I think just like believing in it and not giving up on it, and you know, just like allowing myself to like be vulnerable as far as like, y'all really love this record. Y'all really love, like, I'm really a nerd for this. Like, I'm really passionate. Like, things that, you know, you'd get made fun of as a kid for doing. Like, I got made fun of so much as a kid for, like, being obsessed with music and, like, in a deeper way where I'm like, I know these artists. Like, they'd be like, shut up. So just, like, leaning into all those little quirky things that kind of make me and made me then and, like, running to it, not running from it. And I think that stuck with people. I think that sticks with people. It's just like, oh, this guy's just being himself. He's not actually like, this is not a show. This is him. So it's really just kind of like one person at a time, just like one person comes and like, oh yeah, I got to bring my friend next time. Oh, I got to bring my boyfriend next time. I got to bring my girlfriend next time. So it's like kind of organically become something and it's exactly the way I would have wanted it. And it's what I was scared of before. It's like, oh, I don't want to miss out on the chance to do it like this. I want to get to know the people who are coming here. I want to get to make some friends. I want people to make friends to this. But if it gets too big too soon, then it just becomes a product. And it's not like, it's not a world you can live in. And I feel like it's a world. And yeah, it's really cool.
Okay, interrupting this episode with Free to tell you about another episode with my friend Jezebel. You might remember Jezebel from an episode about a year ago at this time. I called the episode Sorry for the Late Reply, and we spoke about the emotional and mental toll our email inboxes can have on us. Unread emails mixed in with a mountain of junk mail can feel so overwhelming, and it can feel really precious about trying to reply to everything or even avoiding our inboxes entirely because the thought of opening it up to just see what's in there is too overwhelming. I deeply relate. This is where Jezebel comes in. She helps us turn chaotic, overwhelming inboxes into playful, anxiety-free spaces that we actually want to spend time in. She's transformed the inboxes of so many people, including guests of this podcast like Carolyn Palmer and me, actually. Jezebel has now put all of this knowledge into a step-by-step inbox class that takes you through bite-sized modules so you won't get overwhelmed by the process, and you'll learn how to declutter and organize and automate your inbox. But what I loved most about my experience working with Jezebel on this is her focus on visual cues like colors and symbols to add creativity back into your inbox space. You should really see what she's able to make her inbox look like. I really never knew it was possible for Gmail to look this way, but it can. In our podcast episode, we talked about one of the main reasons why inboxes are so overwhelming is because platforms like Gmail set you up with all these default settings that you don't actually even need. One of the modules in her class is on tweaking these default settings. It takes about 10 minutes and you'll get rid of 50% of unnecessary visual clutter. And I swear that alone will change your entire inbox experience. You can actually grab this module for free by going to the link in the show notes and scrolling down to the inbox class page. And if you like that free module and you want to grab the class, which I have a feeling you might want to do, you can use the code LETITOUT to get 20% off. If your inbox is triggering anxiety like mine often was and sometimes is, trust me, the thing that will help is organizing it with Jezebel's class and letting it completely help you. So give it a go. Links in the show notes. Now back to my episode with Free.
It's tricky to be able to make that call to keep it exactly how you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
When your life is in a malleable place or financially,
yeah.
Like it would be a lot different of a story if, you know, you had just gotten a huge commercial,
right?
And then you were like, well, fuck,
I'm in the money.
Yeah, I'll rent a venue.
I got money to blow. It's all good.
Yeah, it even speaks to your commitment to it being this way because, and that's I keep going back to the Autumn episode, our patron saint of it. but she said that too, of like making money through commercials or making money through all different ways, and like same, or having a full-time job and doing work on the side,
yeah.
Or having, like I do, 17 jobs and like mm-hmm. trying to muddle it together and make it work. And I think the more honesty about money and how we make money to fund our other projects.
For sure. Yeah.
Because I often felt like, well, oh, I'm not like a real writer podcast because I also do this other thing over here to
right.
make money. And it's like, well, everyone's kind of doing that.
Everyone's doing that.
Or
yeah.
they, you know, their parents gave them, which is like also great and cool. But like, if you just don't know that, you think that you want to put the pressure on the work to make you money or on Record Club to make you money. And then it becomes not as much art. It becomes commerce.
Right.
And you are able to navigate that so brilliantly because it really does feel like a community. And I wanted to actually talk about that bit a little bit because sure. in the LA Times article, one of my favorite bits to it, and I know you loved this too, but I just, this was beautiful, but they wrote, sometimes the coolest thing is to be around people and to not talk.
Yeah.
It's just so good. And there's not a lot of places that we can do that, at least not a lot of places we can do that with some strangers, maybe the movies, I guess.
Right.
But there, and you made that comparison earlier, like we don't have that for music. And there's something so comforting to me about being with someone, being together without the social pressure of communicating, of entertaining, right. of conversing at all. Mm. And just, I used to call it, this ex-boyfriend of mine actually said this, but we would call it a single man moment. Have you seen that movie, A Single Man?
Oh, no. That's the one with Colin Firth, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Well, there's this scene where him and his, the person that he's dating or whatever, mm. they're, or his like husband, essentially, they're like sitting on the couch just reading. And it's like I like took a screenshot of the still of it because that's such a lovely thing to
yeah,
have.
Yeah, I love that. I love that so much. Like when you're not feeling the pressure to like, because you know, sometimes we're performing a little bit and mm-hmm. just like want to make this person like us, want to make sure this person feels comfortable, want to make sure this person doesn't think we're boring. So definitely there's that pressure of like, there should be something happening or we should be conversing or something. Cause you feel like if you're not, you might be losing the person. But I love that, like, you know, doing this, like the Record Club kind of takes the pressure off of like those initial social encounters and you can just kind of be like, oh shit. Well, I know we like the same music already. Cause we were both enjoying this, like as we sat next to each other and just like, we're in the moment so much so that we were just like, what's your name? But we kind of just like felt the same thing and experienced the same thing together. And that bonds us already. So from here, we could probably go on and have a good friendship because at least we know, one, we got one thing in common. Two, we have like an experience in common, mm-hmm. an experience that we really enjoyed and really felt deeply, hopefully. And I feel like that's a good grounds to start a friendship. And you know, slowly kind of build this little community of people who are just like, okay, we love this thing and now we're kind of becoming friends through it. I mean, just seeing that kind of happen has been pretty wild.
Yeah.
I mean, seeing people hanging out outside. I'm like, oh, you guys are, oh, that's really cool.
There's not many things like it. And that's a really good point about you have something to talk about. Mm-hmm. Like I often think about that. If I'm hanging out with someone or I'm going on a date, right. I like to do, if it was going to be a movie, I like to do, let's go to the movie first and then let's get a drink after, or let's go to dinner after. Yeah, because then that way, no matter what, we can at least be like, that was cool, or that was weird, or what did you think? There's something, you know what I mean? Yeah,
you know, the movie date, I feel like I kind of turned my back on it. I need to jump back in.
Yeah.
Because I go to movies by myself most of the time.
Same. I mean, same. That's also incredible.
But I think it's also, especially if you're going with somebody who maybe kind of has a similar passion for movies that you do or whatever.
Yeah. Or if they don't.
Or you might not know that until after.
Right. Exactly. Or it might be illuminating that, you know, that you don't.
It's like, oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Or just like, wow, you like something really, do you have a completely different perspective on that than I do?
Yeah, I'm more of a Rush Hour guy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think what you were saying about you're giving people the space to have hit the ground running with a potential acquaintanceship that could become a friendship, and not having to connect over, like you said, performing to be liked,
right.
or commiserate with each other too, mm. of like, 'cause I think that's what people often go into, myself included, where it's like, you start talking about the shitty thing that happened to you that day, how the state of the world or whatever. Uh-huh. And again, like, they're venting, there's a place for that too. But I just don't find that very fulfilling and uplifting. And I think what you create is really cool. And I think, like, that quote about being together, being in a room together in person, listening without the pressure of speaking. There was a New York Times article about reading parties. Have you heard about this?
No. Whoa, that's okay. Please tell me about it. No,
I'll send you the article, but it's like people, it's what it sounds like. They do like 15-minute chunk. I want to host one here, but it's like kind of similar to Record Club in a way, where I think somebody talks at the beginning and then they all just bring books and read for half hour, 20 minutes. And then they have a break where they both, you have like a partner and you talk about the pages that you just read. Mm. You tell the other, okay. And then you read for another half an hour, and that's
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that'd be so fun to do in a park, just like with like our friends, you
for
know,
sure.
like not even make it a thing. But anyway, I just think clearly, you know, there's a loneliness epidemic. We're craving this sort of type of communication. And I just think that is one part of it that's incredible. But then also, you know, you holding space for it, you're an incredible speaker, and you can tell your passion for it and your preparation. But what you mentioned about the level of feeling, like you with getting people into their bodies and out of their heads is really hard. And I'm someone who tends to think my feelings instead of feel them, you know what I mean? And, lives in this sort of cerebral place. And music is one of the very few things that can get me and can make me, I think a lot of people can make us feel something. I mean, like you said, that's why it goes into movies.
I think in order to enjoy music the way it's intended, you kind of have to get out of like, and I think that may be the problem with how we see music now. I think we're thinking a lot about what the music is or how it sounds or what it's supposed to be versus like just listening and enjoying it and just kind of like allowing it to like tell us what it is. Like, I think that's what I try to kind of encourage through doing this is like, don't think too much about like, just like, let me do the thinking for you. That's why I just did this whole presentation, set you up. So you got all the information and then you can just get to feeling it. You just get into the music, get out of your head, get into your body, like get out of your mind. And it's really like, I mean, like that, that quote in that article from LA Times I had, is just like, it's almost like group meditation, like for real, because it's like, that's why I encourage like everyone to get off their phones and encourage like everyone to not talk too much, and just like really get into it, because like on the other side of that is just going to be like a beautiful experience, like the one we just had with for Amy Winehouse. I feel like that was that one was like where I had to kind of I had to remind people, like, I know that this audience is growing, but like we're here for the music is the main character. So like let's all just like try our best to like shut up and just try our best to like really dive in, because I promise you, if you do, you will come out of this like, damn, I needed that. Okay, I needed that.
I think what you do so well about what you said with your ability to like do what you like doing as a kid and going down the rabbit hole and being a nerd. Mm-hmm. And the other part of feeling, I think outside of the music itself, is that you're giving everybody else who feels that way, which there's a lot of people, you committing to this thing that feels so good for you gives everybody else in there the space to be like, what do I like as much as this guy likes that?
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah. That's cool. I didn't even think about it like that. Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And honestly, like, because sometimes I think people maybe get the impression sometimes that like if they don't show up, then like they're not supporting me. I'm like, I'm not trying to get you to come to support me. I'm trying to get you to come because this is an experience that you will really love. And I think that, you know, that's normally what I'm getting back from people. Like after they do come, they're like, whoa, this is amazing. Like I feel like I now want to go on a deep dive. Now I want to go on a rabbit hole with this music or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's like just kind of reminding people like it's okay to kind of nerd out. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be like deeply passionate about something to a point where you like it's almost kind of goofy. Like that's how you should feel about things. You should be excited, super excited about like everything that like you love, because otherwise, do you love it if you're not like if it doesn't make you like giggly and kind of like, you know, kind of obsessive? Like, I mean, you know, we're talking about like not people, but but like.
But also been there.
Also, you know, we're all guilty.
Crushes.
We learn. Yeah. I mean, but hey, sometimes that's your way in. It's like
totally.
You obsess over it and then you're like, okay, let me, yeah. But I think I lost my train of thought. But yeah, I mean, I really feel like people seeing someone publicly like obsess over things, I think maybe it gives them permission to feel like they can do the same.
Oh, absolutely. And in both of the ones that I've been to recently, I mean, I think that is definitely a through line in many of the artists that you cover in Record Club, of that sort of commitment to the album and commitment to the work their version of that too. And I don't know. I mean, I think we're around the same age, and I think
I'm 45. I don't think so. I'm kidding.
You look great.
Not there yet.
You do look great, but
still in my 30s. Thank you.
But I think for me, it was like, or I think for this is not generational. This is just maybe being a teen, or you know, this is part of slacker culture, or like it's cool to not try. It's cool to not care,
right?
And like caring, like we kind of had to pretend. Like I remember being so in elementary school, being so deeply, deeply obsessed with the Spice Girls at the point
where, as you like, should be at that time,
right? And this was first grade. And my mom had the cassette tape, and then sudden, and it was fine. And it was like, yeah, people were into it, whatever. And then it was like, it switched and it was suddenly uncool anymore, but I was still super all in.
Oh,
and
I
like,
respect that.
But I had to hide that, because I was like, that's not, it's not cool anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think that has gone to the distance as a subconscious feeling ways that I've had to, like, when I became a grown up, be like, no, I'm a theater kid. I'm into this weird thing. I know. And I think having the internet and growing up with the internet, and like it allows us to connect with people and have subcultures more easily and allows for that. But did you feel that way growing up, or did you feel like you ever had to hide your...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So much. I mean, first off, I'm from Texas. So like, I don't know. I think kids in the South are just a little different. Like, I think LA kids, especially,
I'm
just
sure,
like,
yeah,
very kind of naturally, like, they see the wonder. I mean, not that people in Texas don't see the wonder, but just like, they're just a bit more open to kind of like the vulnerability that it requires to like be openly obsessed about something, or, you know. So I think growing up, that was really like shunned, but it was something I would never run from it. It's just like, this is like, this is my sanity, because like, especially being a kid, getting bullied, you know, not like hating school, like legit hating school. There was no other way that I was going to be like a normal, sane kid if I didn't have like those obsessions that I could like go home to and just like, okay, like, this is my world. School sucks, but like, when I go home, like, that's my world. Kids would still make fun of me hella, but I would still do it. Like, I remember I'd be the kid who's just like writing down, like literally like listening to a song and like writing down the lyrics in my notebooks, just so I can like memorize them. I'm sure a lot of kids do that though. But just like these little dumb obsessive hobbies. I'm just like, why are you doing this? Like, and even like the music I was listening to, like, I remember like, I remember I was openly like in love with Justin's first album, Justified. And this was like, I had to be like eighth grade, maybe freshman year. And kids were making fun of me so hard for like, cause I'd hear it over the weekend. I heard it on like AOL, like AOL would let you kind of like stream it before it came out. You know, you get this little terrible stream, but it's just like, oh, Señorita, what is this? This is not, I mean, like, so, and then, you know, I'm
super. It's official. We are the same. Research has come in. We are the same age. The research department, yep, has confirmed.
Aged myself for sure with that. But I remember just like going to school like the next day, maybe like the next week, and it's all I could talk about and think about. Yeah. And kids were like, yo, what are you, bro, shut up. Like, yeah. Justin Timberlake? And it's like, trust me, bro, this is so good. Like, trust me. And, you know, the kids wouldn't trust me. But I think a lot of the stuff that I thought was like, the stuff that I was getting made fun of for, whether it be my taste in music, even how I spoke, just like the things that I would get made fun of for, end up becoming like my superpowers as like an adult. Mm-hmm. So I think that like that little thing that is in kids to like kind of try to suppress the parts of you that kind of make you stand out, or I hate that. And I'm glad that like I didn't allow that to like push me off the path, because I definitely would catch myself sometimes as an adult or like young adult. Well, I'm still young adult technically. Kind of like maybe trying to hide that a little bit, not trying to show it too much. But as I get older and older, I'm just like, I've just become more of myself, and I've become more of that. I feel like I'm even more of a 15-year-old than I was when I was 15 years old. Like, where everything I hear is just like, this, yeah, is the best thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yes.
This is incredible. This is so, like, so much hyperbole. But it's just like, that's like when you're really into like tapping into like your inner child, you allow yourself to have fun with things and allow yourself to not be, you know, to kind of shut off the inner, like, chill out, the shame that you get, that you develop as a kid, that kind of pushes you away from like,
yeah,
being your true self, like trying to find ways to just completely like move past that. And sometimes hear that voice in your head, but not allowed to like sway you. And also know that voice in your head is probably that kid from fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade, and realize that like, well, fuck that kid.
Right.
I'm gonna do what I want,
right?
And that's fully this stage of my life, the record club. That's fully just like embracing, like, allowing myself to be that kid that's openly passionate about everything, and will let you know like what, like, you're gonna know what I'm into, like, you know, at least through the work that I do, you're gonna know what I'm into so much so you might be like, yo, shut up,
yeah,
but. Yeah, that's the only way for me to like show my love for things, is to really like spend the time, do the work, and allow it to become like a part of my identity in a way.
And it's corrective to that kid in Texas.
Absolutely. 1,000%. Yeah. Like, allowing myself to be the kid that I wish I would have been allowed to be when I was young. And I was still that kid, but I was that kid when I went home.
Right.
I wasn't that kid around my friends, because when I would be, you know, they'd kind of like shut the hell up. So I kind of quieted that voice for a little while, but then I realized I literally could not exist if I couldn't like talk to my friends about, well, have you heard this?
Yeah.
Have you seen this movie? Have you like, I couldn't like, we can't be friends then, you know?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, embracing that weird part of myself, or it's not even weird, but just embracing the part of myself that just like can't resist diving deep on every single thing.
Sure.
Yeah, allowing that to just be okay has been life-changing.
Well, I mean, I think your slip into calling that weird is because of the kids who made fun
right,
of me
exactly.
for still yeah, liking yeah, Spice yeah. Girls a little longer
for
than
sure.
they did. And the kid that didn't get you liking Timberlake. And I think even if you said, you know, when you were at home, you were able to lean into it. It's like, think of how much you even probably toned, we probably even toned that down on some level because we didn't want to go fully in because of there were consequences to that.
Right.
Right. And I've been thinking about that a lot lately, like in kind of that exact piece of, it's so funny that you said you feel like more like a 15-year-old now than you did, because I feel like I was telling you before we started recording that I went to see The Virgin Suicides this weekend, which is like such a teen, just, all, I'm having a lot of teen and experiences.
Yeah, coming of age.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I Olivia Rodrigo's new album, like when that came out, I think it's incredible. And she has a Gen X mom who like has all these incredible influences. And I love it so much. And I, you know, I said to a friend, I was like, it says, I had this like sort of breakup. And I was like, it says a lot about the maturity of this person that I'm relating to all these songs about. a younger person than me wrote. But it's
yeah,
because like,
she's like what, 19, 20? What is?
I think she's 20 now, but let's 20, say she okay. wrote it when she was 19. But still, but really, that and like that's funny. But actually, it doesn't really matter that it's not actually that surprising, because these feelings are universal. The only
absolutely.
Thing that is different when you're a teenager is that you're feeling them for the first time, and they're sort of overblown.
Right, compared to nothing, yeah.
Exactly, but I think that is why the music that we hear when we're younger and at that age is so impactful, and the feelings that it brings up, and like going back to what you said about feeling, like I had an interesting experience where I think I realized that music does that. You know what I mean? Like that, like, oh, when I was so, after like the first big breakup I had, I didn't want to listen to music. Cause it was like, oh, I can't even touch that. Like I can't
immediate
even,
tears.
I just can't feel, period. I want to like, whenever I don't want to
right,
feel,
right.
I'm like, I'll listen to podcasts off. Or I'll like, mm-hmm. I got to distract in a different way because I don't want to, you know, and I'm like, oh, that's how that works, you know? And I think that anything that gets people to feel is really good in our like disconnected, siloed world.
Absolutely.
Post-pandemic intensified. And then getting people to feel in a group, there's like that in meditation, the Maharishi effect. Have you heard about that?
No, please tell me.
Where there's like a collective, whenever you get a critical mass of people doing something at the same time.
Oh, yes,
together,
yes, yeah. Familiar.
Like crime rates lower.
Exactly.
Like heart, like health things. There's all these markers.
And which is why, you know, our governments hate when we all get on the same page about things.
Exactly. And that's like you're doing that with Record Club. Yeah. And it builds community in this way that like, and it gets people feeling. And that the other thing I just wanted to pick up on too, of what you were saying about, you know, we both love movies and we both love hearing about the directors that we love and how they made it. And same mm-hmm. obviously with albums and music. And what I just thought it was interesting how you were like, well, you can, getting analytical about it, I want more than anything. Like my favorite part of Record Club isn't actually the listening, even though I love that, it's so beautiful, is, you know, I have to be honest, like, is your commentary.
Oh, wow.
But I am so happy that it makes me have a deeper experience listening to the album later on my own.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool to hear.
But this is like a thought I'm just having off the top of my head right now, because I'm just curious what you think. But
I agree.
You might not. Because I'm not sure if I even agree, but you said this point, you were like, I'm wondering if I'm getting people to get out of the feeling and the body of it and getting them into their heads by giving them the information of like how it was made. Because I guess I'm thinking of the Thriller album. And when I listened to it after I heard what you said about it, I was thinking like, oh, wow, Michael is this age. And wow, isn't that like I was doing that, which was fun and cool. And I loved it.
Which I will say that like it's almost like a circular kind of thing of like, okay, by you having this information and this context, it allows you to kind of just like open yourself up to feeling the music a bit more, because you're like, oh, so this guy was probably feeling X, Y, and Z when he wrote this song. So I feel like it's almost like a way to feel like you connect with the artist a bit more. So then you're more likely to open yourself up to what they're giving you.
Yeah.
So the context that I present, it does get you in your head, because it kind of like, oh, this is like really interesting. And you're not hearing any music at that time. Yeah. So, but I think it's the best way I know how to get people to give something a chance.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, because in my dream is like, for the record club to kind of be something where people don't even need to know what the album is. They just come because
that's how I feel.
They think it's great. And they just, oh, like, I trust this guy. I want to. So my thing is like, okay, let me give you as much context as I can so that you at least listen to it with open ears.
Yeah.
And if you've heard it already, you listen to it with new ears.
Yeah.
Because you, oh, I didn't know this thing about this. Oh, totally. I didn't know this thing. So then all of a sudden you're kind of like, it unlocks another part of you to where, okay, you're a bit more loose and a bit more open to like, oh, okay, I'm really interested to see how this music's gonna make me feel now that I know all this stuff. And from then on, it's just like, so it's like a constant little like, okay, I want you to feel for a moment. And then I'm gonna give you some more information that's gonna make you feel this next thing even more.
Yeah.
And it's also just fun.
No, I love that. And I guess I was just thinking about like what you said with a movie. Like
we
would love to have someone give us the director's notes before the film and set it up and then watch it. But then I'm wondering, like, you know what? Maybe I would want to watch it first.
For sure.
Have my interaction with it and then hear from the director and then watch it again, preferably.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's a long set of time.
For sure.
And same with Record Club. I guess that's what I was thinking. Like, what if you played the album first, did your talk, then played it again? But I guess that doubles the time of
To be honest, I feel like there's a version of that could exist at some point. But I think in the way that it works now, you know, because we try to keep it within like this two, at least the session part of it, we try to keep it like within a 2 hour window, 2.5, if it's that long album. It's like, it's the best way I know, because I've seen it work.
Yeah.
Is to like, kind of like, what's the word I'm looking for? Disarm the room.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, well, I didn't know that. Oh, interesting. Okay. So now when I hear this album, I'm so curious now about, like, I'm kind of like anticipating hearing this album now. Because I think if you just come in, it'd be a lot more passive of a listen, I think. If I'm just like, all right, pressing play.
Vibes would be off.
It would be a lot more passive of a listen. So I think the things that I do are just to kind of like open the room up fully. So it's like, all right, now you can receive this album, because you're not, you know, whatever you heard about the artist, you're not thinking about that anymore. You're thinking about, oh, they were like struggling with blah, blah, blah when this came out. So you're not thinking about the tabloid or the whatever the discourse is. You're just thinking about, oh, he made this in Memphis. Oh, he was in New York. Oh, she was in Japan. She just got divorced, blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's just like, it's things to kind of let you see the person as like a just regular human being. And just allow you to take this art in, just like, all right, like, I'm so curious of like what this is now, because I know more about what it took to make this. So now I'm just a bit more like, okay, like, let me hear what you have to say. You know?
It's so true. Your preconceived notions went out the window. I mean, that was definitely the case for me with, and probably for a lot of people with the last two that you did, Amy Winehouse and totally. Michael Jackson.
Totally.
And that's what's really cool about it. I mean, and I think what you just touched on there, the sense of holding space and reading a room, and that's related to building community, but I'm guessing that your years of DJing probably made you very attuned to that. And I guess what is your greatest lesson on community building and holding space, and exactly what you just explained, like, yeah. Nope, actually it is this way because of this. And I know I've felt like you are very attuned. Do you have any like advice for someone who hosts events or someone just hosting up? Like, how do you, I'm sure it's kind of intuitive, but mm-hmm. is there any advice you can give?
I feel like if you know yourself well enough and you spent time with yourself and you kind of like, you believe that whatever this idea is or this thing is not important on some ego thing, but like important in the way that it might make people feel and the way that it might get people together. And I think setting your intentions on like, okay, I want this to be a place for people to really actually get to connect, not on some kind of like, cause you know, there's so many events in LA where it's just kind of like people aren't really connecting. It's just like 100 conversations of like, what do you do? Well, yeah. What do you do? So giving people something to do and something to put their focus on, I think just leads to like, oh, you're going to have a room where like the energy is going to be really strong and really potent because this thing is like stimulating everybody in this room. So from that point on, they're going to obviously go on and have conversations because they're just like, whoa, this feels really good. So I think knowing yourself and knowing how you want to present it and like not being afraid to maybe be a little weird, be a little strange or like, but I think through you being yourself, it's like, you're immediately just kind of like sending a signal to everyone in that room, like, hey, like, it's all good. Like, I'm chilling. Like, you can chill too. You can relax. Like, it's okay. And I think disarming the room and understanding how to disarm the room, it just takes practice. It takes like having conversations with people, like understanding people. You can't just show up and be like, I want to do an event. You got to kind of be in the community a bit, be out a little bit. Be having conversations, be meeting people, be building relationships. And through that, you'll get the bandwidth to like understand like what it takes to really like put an event together. You can't just do it. You can't just do it and expect it to be great. Mm-hmm. You have to do it and expect to learn and open yourself up to like, you know, a misfire, a failure, maybe looking stupid, maybe spending 3 years. I've done this 3 years of your life making no money, but doing something you're very passionate about. Yeah. So right before I did the record club, I was doing this thing called the music video. And that was like something where I would like bring in music video directors, short film directors, TV directors, whatever, and just kind of like just do like one-on-one interviews with them or like panel group interviews. I hate panels now, but group interviews with people. And that was like me cutting my teeth in the space of like getting community together and also like exploring my interests and passions in a deeper way where it's like, okay, I really am interested in like where music videos are going post MTV. This is very fascinating. I want to explore it. Can I just hit some directors up and just like interview them? Can I do that? Let's see. I guess back to the advice, I think everything starts off with like a passion or curiosity or a question you have that you want to get answered. And that can lead you, that'll lead you down the pathway to just like explore and then find it. And then once you find it, you use that. Those skills you've been building through being around community, having conversations, and then it all bubbles up into like, oh, this is something. Wow. And it might just not be. And then maybe you'll just be like, okay, maybe not for me. Or you might be like, okay, I got enough from this to know that I could do something different or better or blah, blah, blah. I'm going to talk for 5 more hours about this.
No, that's so true. Cause it's like, you have to put the car in drive and start rolling to be able to iterate or to be able to get receive criticism and be able to be rerouted if needed. But you can't be rerouted if you're sitting in park. Mm-hmm. You have to start. And I think having a niche, but like having a container that you were saying, I think is really is really important. And
I also think, just to, because you mentioned criticism, I also think it's important to like not be too focused on criticism too early. Like, because if this is something that is personal to you, step one is like, what is it for you? What do you want it to be? How do you see it? Like, and no one can tell you that. No criticism can tell you who you are and who you are within this thing. So that has to kind of be at the forefront. It's like just using your imagination and trusting in that imagination and trusting in like your taste and your ideas and allowing that to steer the ship. Because I think if criticism becomes your North Star too early, you could start changing an idea that was actually working really well for you, but because X, Y, and Z person had notes for you, you start feeling self-conscious about something that you knew was true for you. And that's something that was big for me with the record club, was just like, because I remember those early conversations. And listen, it was some close friends of mine who were just like, I don't know, this is going to work. But there's like, you know, close friends that I trust who I opened up to, and they kind of gave me the feedback that I needed. But for the most part, like, I'm just like going. Because I know that if I feel strongly about it, there's got to be something to that. There's got to be something there. So even if it doesn't work out, at least I know that I explored it the way that I wanted to explore it. Because if I'm going to fail or lose at something, I want to lose on my own terms and like with my own choices. I don't want to lose with someone else's choice where they're like, hey, you should try it this way. And then I try it and then it sucks. Yeah. Then it's just like, well, I didn't even really want to do that. I was just like taking some notes and then it ended up sucking. Like, that's not, you know, so I think that's why I say like getting to know yourself and spending time with yourself and learning to really trust yourself if you're a creative person or something in the neighborhood, and being okay with like, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but this is how I think it should work.
Right.
Like, make choices, like, and allow that to be okay. Like, don't run from your agency in a thing, because if you do, then you could win, but you're not going to have fun.
Right.
And if it's something you want to do the rest of your life, or, you know, at least a part of your life, you got to learn to have a relationship with it that is enjoyable and fun, because who wants to be in a relationship that isn't waking up excited about, you know what I'm saying? So.
Right. Or it's not sustainable.
Yeah. And, I mean, and you think it is, and you can do it, but it's going to eat you. It's going to eat you up. And at some point you're going to be like, this was supposed to be like fun. This was supposed to be cool. This was supposed to be enjoyable. Now it's just like, I'm just doing it.
I know. And I think that's nothing feels worse than we've given so many examples of people who really commit to doing something the way that they wanted to, not really having any expectations, but making something that's, you know, almost diaristic, and that we know enough and have a big enough sample size to know like that's usually the thing that works, which is so beautiful about art. And like, there's that David Bowie quote about how he says it could be like a drinking game, how often I say it on the podcast. But I'm sure you've heard it.
Is it about the water thing of like,
no, I don't
know. Oh, wait, okay, maybe. No, go ahead, sorry.
I want to hear that too. The one that I'm like a broken record with is that he was quoted saying that when he tried to make work for an audience and second guessed an audience, the work always suffered. But when he made it for himself, that's when it was always the best. And, you know, that's the Blanchell example.
Right.
That's like, we have many examples. That's your example with Record Club for sure. And I feel like that's what's so beautiful about creativity, is like when it is personal and it feels good for you, it also feels good for the
absolutely
audience. Like that's what's so beautiful.
And I feel like don't treat the audience like they're stupid, you know, like they, like, you don't need to like pat them on the head like, hey, I did this just for you.
Right.
They want to experience, they want to see, like, that's, they want to experience your offering. Like, because if they're coming to the space to experience something that you put together, they're here to experience something you put together, not to feed them. And listen, people do this all the time, and I have no problem with it, because it's fun to hear like what people's ideas would be for this. But I never taken any feedback as far as picking albums. I never do that.
Yeah.
And I've gotten millions of like, hey, you should do this album. I never do it, because I'm just like, the album, it has to feel like, It has to be something that I truly enjoy, something I'm either obsessed with, something I'm deeply curious about, or a little bit of both. But I can't just be like, oh yeah, this is the big album that everybody wants me to do. I'm going to do that one. Because then I'm just kind of giving away like one of the big pieces of like real estate in the whole thing is just like the choices I get to make of like what we're going to listen to. So I really feel like just dialing in on like how you see it and what you want to present and what you want to share, and less about like thinking about the outcome and the feedback or blah, blah, blah. Because I think if you trust yourself, and you build up your taste and, you know, over time, people are going to start coming to you for like, oh, please, like, we're kind of looking to you for like some curation and some guidance as far as like what we should be listening to. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're some kind of like, oh yeah, I'm the master of all choices, but people need if people are coming to your thing, they need what you're providing. So give them that. Don't give them what you think what they think they want to have. Like, yeah. Give them what you think they should have and allow that to, like, and live and die on that. Like, and if they don't come back, cool. Well, I guess not for them. It's going to be for somebody.
And that would be felt, right? If you did an album that you, because someone told you to, or you did a crowd vote, like, you wouldn't have that.
I wouldn't be excited. I wouldn't be like the, ooh, like, given all these dumb nerdy facts that I give, like, I just would feel like, you know, I'd be performing. I'd be kind of like faking it a little bit. I'm just like, oh yeah, yo, this is really like. And listen, it may get to a point because you know, there's so many albums that I would love to do, but it may get to a point where it's just like, there's an album that I don't really know that much about. But then I'll find my way in through the process, and it'll become like one of my favorite albums. Yeah. Because even like with the Amy Winehouse record, it wasn't an album that I just like was deeply obsessed with. It was an album that I was so curious about and so like compelled by her story. And I was just like, okay, what if I can strip away all that baggage of like celebrity and drug abuse and et cetera, and just like kind of experience the album just as like, okay, like, what is this? And in doing that, I was just like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah. And from having a relationship with it, building a relationship with it through that time, I was able to kind of like extend that to people like, this is something I just found that I think you might enjoy. And here's a story. But yeah, it can never be about what anyone else wants me to do but me. And I am building up a team of collaborators that I'm working with. But I think my main thing is like that I'm not really looking for people to collaborate with. I'm more so looking for people to like just be in this world with me and just like just help me kind of like expand it. Because it's really an art project deep down. It's not like, this is not some kind of like, hey, this is my way to like, you know, business. It's like, it's an art project, as you see with the zine that I just made.
So good.
You know, all the design that I do for it and et cetera. Yeah. And just my approach to it in general. It's just like, I'm an artist and this is my art that I'm sharing. And
that's why it's good.
Yeah. And that's how I can allow it to be personal is because it's like, okay, well, this is an art project. I'm not trying to make this like big, like global, like we are the big business for the theater of the album. It's like you want one in every single city. It's not, you know, it's just like me putting something together that I think it would be interesting and fun for people to enjoy and giving it to them. And yeah, it's cool. It's fun. I know I'm rambling again. And I'm going to say I'm rambling for the entire time because I feel like I am.
I think even as it grows, because I know you do have aspirations to do this in Japan and to grow it. But from my perspective, what you're saying, and correct me, is that as it grows, even if it becomes big, you want it to feel small.
Want it to feel super small. And that was something that was interesting to try with the last session we did for Amy Winehouse when we did Back to Black. That was the most people we ever had in that room. It was like maybe about 120 people. And I was afraid of that because I was just like, are we going to lose some of the intimacy because of the number? Like, and what I think what I'm learning is that the approach is what creates the intimacy.
Mm-hmm. It's you.
Is like, you know, letting people know like, listen, this is not a phones thing. This is not a talking thing. This is like an intentional listening thing.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, really talking to people like we're hanging out.
Yeah.
I think makes people feel a bit of safety it makes them feel like a pretty quick connection of like, oh, he's just like me. He's not like a super journalist, host, formal guy. He's just hanging out. He'll crack a joke every now and then. He'll say something ridiculous every now and then. Like, oh, this is just like a person being a person. I can like let my guard down and just enjoy it. And
yeah.
I think that what was a great lesson to learn from that is that like, no matter the size of the room, if I come into the room that way, I can make it feel small.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I'm trying to have like 3,000 people here or something like that, but I do know that there's a way to like make a room kind of feel like, you know, it's just me and you. No matter what the size of the room is. And I think I learned that through that. And that was really, really fun.
Well, I mean, if we think of parasocial relationships, right? It's like, it doesn't matter the amount of people, it's you, like it's you being yourself. It's you being in the choosing the album. Like that's why that all is so important, because yeah. You have to convey that. I mean, I think I experienced that in my own tiny way. I feel like I learned that lesson fairly early on. And in this, it's 11 years I've been recording my voice on the internet in this conversation.
Wow, 11 years. That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And when I started it, obviously I was just reaching out to people who I was curious about. Mm-hmm. And then eventually I would get these like PR emails or people pitching
that's cool.
me.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was cool. So I was like, yeah, of course. And kind of said yes to everybody. And then I was like, oh, this doesn't really work.
Yeah.
I need to just do whoever I want to get an hour of their time.
Right. It's got
to
be handpicked or it's, yeah. Okay.
And that's my version of having an album that isn't, it has to be me like going into all these weird directions, even if they have a big following, even if it might be a PR choice.
But especially I feel like especially with that though, it's like the selection is so important. Because like, and it's also like, it's kind of like a character test as far as like, what's the character of the thing? Is it just about doing the look? Is it just about kind of like trying to go viral? Or is it about like creating something that will resonate with people? And I think sometimes picking the big, trying to go for the spectacle route of just like, can I make a big splash?
Yeah.
You could get lost in that. And next thing you know, it's just like, it's kind of like what was happening early on with me. It was just like, you could get lost in that to where it's just like, wait, is it about this or is it about this? I need to make a choice because right now, because I was saying it was about this, but now it seems to be about this, you know?
Yeah. And I think I definitely did that. Like, I think I went down, it just got a little bit away from me because in some ways I think it was a good call to interview somebody I wouldn't have reached out to on my own, but like they're here and it could bring more people to this show so I can keep doing it potentially. And that never even really happens necessarily. But also I was able to be like, okay, well, what is my in with this person, and use it as a creative constraint to be like you were saying, like maybe I can relate to this. And sometimes that does work. But other times it's like you have to be discerning of like,
absolutely.
Yes, that seems interesting. No, that doesn't. Uh-huh. And having to be able to do that, you have to have that clarity and you have to develop your taste, which is like, that's what I want to talk
about.
Yeah. And that's what I want to talk about with you more. And we should move into the asking for a friend portion.
Okay. Yeah.
Which this one relates, because this question comes from our friend Christine. And
what's up, Christine?
And I had a similar question and I was like, oh, that's so funny. Look what my first question is. I went all out of order, but I was going to ask you this first, but she like clarified it. And so, okay. So I was going to ask you what you were like as a kid and what kind of music you were listening to growing up, and which I still would like to know. And then what your first album was, if you remembered. And she clarified, and what her question is, you can answer both, was, what was the first CD you ever bought with your own money? So maybe start there, because this whole chapter, like this whole act that we're moving into is about like, this is how you developed your taste. Mm-hmm. This is all part of you. And I want to like go into that, because I feel like I'm still developing my taste, and I know so little about music and movies, and I'm figuring it out as I'm like a teen trapped in a 30-something year old's body, unfortunately. Teen with wrinkles and grays.
Teen adults.
Okay, we're gonna end it there, but come back next week to hear his answer to Christine's question. Tom submits a question that really was probably one of the best questions asked. Maddie, previous guest of the show, submits a question, and much more next week. And we really talk more about music, and we talk more about taste and developing taste. And it's kind of backwards because we get more into his trajectory with getting into music. And he tells a story at the beginning about his dad that really made me laugh. And yeah, I loved part one, but part two, come back. Thank you so much for being here and listening. If you like this podcast, please share it with a friend. And honestly, leaving reviews helps so much. And if you want to follow Record Club and Free, get on their email list and you can find out when the next one is. If you're listening to this the week it comes out, well, you just missed March, but I'm unfortunately missing it too because I am in Mexico. I'm in LA recording this, but I will be in Mexico beginning tomorrow morning for a wedding of previous podcast guest, 400th episode's guest. The guest of our 400th episode, Alyssa Benjamin, is getting married to my friend David. So I'm there for their celebration of love. And it is the future when you're listening to this. But the following month, April, there'll be another Record Club. And to find out when it is, follow Record Club on Instagram, linked in the show notes. And there's an email newsletter that you can get. And get yourself a hard copy of the zine. I don't know if there are even more copies, but Free made this incredible zine that he showed me, you know, not to brag, but it wasn't even out yet and it wasn't even done yet. And I got to see it on his computer the day I was there recording this, which was pretty cool. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Free. And I'll be back next week. If you want to find me, you know where to find me. And what else? Our Substack. Feel free to read it and subscribe. I'd love to talk to you there. And next week. Okay. Bye-bye. This podcast is edited by the incredible Brianna Bain. Also, we just put out a new episode of Spiraling this week. So if you want to listen to my second podcast that I co-host with Serena Wolf, you can listen to the entirety of the season. But we just put out a brand new episode and we have one more this season. So we'll link to that as well. Okay. Talk next week. Bye-bye.